It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
From the Fox News Podcast Network, I'm Dana Perino, and everything will be okay. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Everything Will Be Okay. This week, I'm joined by a highly respected judge and author who also happens to be my lovely new co-host of The Five. Jeanine Pirro, professionally known as Judge Jeanine. Well, she's a powerhouse, not just in the courtroom, but now as a co-host of The Five. She offers her authentic and often unfiltered opinions. With a political and media career spanning over 40 years, Judge Jeanine offers advice on how to bounce back from unexpected career detours and how to take ownership of the weight of your words. All right, Judge Jeanine, first I have to say that one thing I noticed when I did Everything Will Be Okay last year when the book came out and I started doing some of these podcast interviews, I realized that you continue to find role models and mentors through your whole life. As you make friends and deepen friendships through your life. And I'm so thrilled to be working with you every day. Aww. On The Five. I look forward to it every day. I learn from you. I love watching you. It's like I can't take my eyes off of you. You're so beautiful, but all the things that you say are so smart, and you've got spunk and personality, and it's a pleasure, real pleasure.
First of all, I must tell you that I listen to you all the time because I think you're the smartest one at the table. Oh. So, and I'm not just throwing a compliment back at you because you gave me one, but you really are. You're deep. You go, you know, some people talk about the onion, and then other people take off one layer, and then you're like right down to the middle layer.
I gotta get in there.
Yeah, you are in there big time. And so, no, it's fun.
It's fun also to, you know, we're at the table. Often it's three gentlemen that we're with.
Yep.
And it's so fun because women can communicate with their eyes.
Indeed, we do.
And we're like, we just said a paragraph to each other in one look.
Yep.
And it's a joy. It
yep.
really is.
Yep.
So this is a podcast where I just like to talk to people about their amazing lives. And I think that translates into advice for people who are starting out or starting over. There's a lot of people who are either quitting a job or starting a new job or thinking of a career transition. You've had a few and you've done that. I want to start, though, at the beginning, because tell people where you were born and how you were brought up. I read that you knew what you wanted to do from the age of 6 years old.
Yes, I always wanted to be a lawyer. I don't know where it came from. I know that at some point in my life, I used to watch Perry Mason. And the thing about Perry Mason was that I always wanted to be a prosecutor because I always wanted to represent the victim. But the amazing part of Perry Mason was he was a defense attorney. And, you know, they always had the wrong guy on trial. And as I got older, I realized that this guy, Hamilton Berger, who was the DA in that long-running series, kept getting reelected, even though he was always prosecuting the wrong guy, because the guilty guy would always sit in the back of the courtroom and everyone would turn around because they knew the guy not on the stand was the one who did it. But and during the course of my life, and I grew up in upstate New York, there weren't a lot of, when I was younger, and I'm no spring chicken, there weren't a lot of women attorneys. In fact, the comments that I would get would be, well, don't you want to be a mommy? And I always thought that the two were mutually exclusive, that you could only be a mommy if you weren't a lawyer and vice versa. So I kind of grew up at a time when the idea of women taking over men's roles was just, or joining men in roles that they were engaged in, was just beginning. And I took a lot of hits for it.
Can I stop you and ask you what your parents encourage you to want to become a lawyer?
Yes, they did.
Right.
They did.
And usually for successful women, you usually have that early
support.
Even if you were a pioneer or if it was going to be a little bit different or a little bit new, like your dad would say, you can do whatever you want.
Yes. It was my dad and my mom. And, you know, my mom, her childhood was very unusual. She was the oldest of four daughters, and her parents sent her back to Lebanon, which I'm of Lebanese Christian heritage, and they sent her back because she was a girl. So she was born in the United States and United States citizen, and her father fought in World War II and all that. And yet, because she was a girl, she was almost disowned and sent to live with relatives in Lebanon. And so I think my mother kind of carried that spirit of, you're not going to exclude women from anything because of their gender. And so I had that real push from my mom, who had suffered so much because she was a girl.
And did she work when you were a little girl?
She was very beautiful. She was a model. She would go into New York City periodically and model. She was stunningly beautiful. But that was it. I mean, you know, she wasn't educated. Mm. She spoke with an accent, and she was robbed of everything because she was a girl. My dad was a veteran. He fought in World War II, and then he ended up running a sales company that my grandfather had of trailers. Mm-hmm. And so the family was in the trailer business. Mm-hmm. And it was a very, you know, medium, middle class, you know, it was about God and education. Education was prized, and family. And it was, it was small town America.
What was it like going to law school? Did you love it right away? Or did you ever have a feeling of like, whoa, do I really want to do this?
Oh, I always knew I was going to do it. There was nothing that would stop me.
Never changed.
No. In fact, I did high school in 3 years because I was in a rush. I was like, why should I stay in high school for 4 years? I can do history, AP history in summer school when everybody else was redoing history. I took it for the first time, got my grade, and then went to college my fourth year of high school.
So you were in a hurry.
I was always in a hurry. I'm still in a hurry.
You still are in a hurry.
I don't know where I'm going, but I'm in a rush.
But that has served you well.
I think it has. I mean, I don't know. Some people would say, but I'm not worried about what they say. I think it has served me well. It's given me the ability to focus on my career and focus on my family and transition, as you mentioned in the beginning of this, that many people end up having to change careers. And, you know, being in a hurry kind of gets you to where you want to be in that next career, you know, as opposed to just being a beginner. No, I got a lot done. It's just part of who I am.
So tell me about your law career, and then also you have children. So you figured out somewhere along the way, a work-life balance that worked for you.
Well, okay. So I'll tell you about, I worked in a dairy. I think I was 14 years old. I had to get working papers. And I remember my dad would drop me off. It was like 5 a.m. And then I would end up making breakfast for the truckers. And, you know, and then in the back, they would be milking the cows, and they made ice cream. It was the Lady Pamela Dairy. And I remember that when there was a calf being born, and the farmer said, Janine, come on back. You can see a calf being born. And so I'm like, la da da. And I go to the back, and then I hear the cow, and there's a bleh. And then I go to the back, and there are two farmers with ropes pulling the calf out.
I grew up on a cattle ranch.
So you know all this.
It's a little bit messy.
It's quite messy. But what stuck in my mind, because they didn't have sex education, and, you know, nobody talked about this, was, if that's how you have a baby, I'm never having a baby. You know, forget about you got to pick law or children. I'm so deep into law, no children. But the truth is that I made a decision after being a prosecutor for 10 years to have children. And
you made a decision.
I love that.
That was a proactive decision. Like, I'm going to have children.
I wanted children. I did. It, you know, I wasn't like my friends in college. They wanted to get married immediately and have children. I wasn't dreaming about getting married. That wasn't the most important thing to me. You know, they dream about the wedding day and for me, it was like, I'm going to get out of law school, and I'm going to try cases, and I'm going to win cases, because I was fascinated with the courtroom. I was obsessed with anything, whether it was as a kid with Perry Mason, or, you know, like 12 Angry Men, and mm-hmm. all of those, you know, movies, and Presumed Innocent. I love the courtroom setting. You put me in a courtroom, and it just, every part of my being is electrified. And
I see that even today on The Five, when we have a legal topic that we can turn to you and ask you about.
You do?
You glow. You light up. Oh. You know it all. And you, so like, I think that's amazing, right? So you, in all the different phases of your career, the law is key.
Yeah, the law is key. I began as an assistant DA. I started the first domestic violence unit in the country.
Tell me about that.
Yeah.
Why?
No one, why? Because if you remember in speaking about my mother, who was my closest friend, rest in peace, but my closest friend, my muse, my inspiration, my strength, my moral core, and you know, she was the person who kind of, I hear her all the time, and she gave me the strength to believe that I could do things and I could make a difference. And she taught me that when we went to the ice cream store that I had to get up for the older woman to sit down. Or on Fridays, we would take a blind lady to the supermarket because Mrs. LeBert couldn't see. And I just remember going into Mrs. LeBert's house and it was so dark. And I said to my mom, I said, why is it so dark? And she said, she's blind. And, you know, it was just my mom taught me the soft side of criminal justice, to take care of the victim. And that was a new concept as a young prosecutor, because it was all about put them all in jail. And my focus was on the victim, healing the victim, trying to make the victim whole again, recognizing the trauma that happened to that victim if the victim were still alive. And so I had that kind of unusual, you know, I just don't want the dirtbag to go to jail. I want to heal her too. And that's her, him, who, the boy, the child, the senior, whomever it might be. And I learned all that from my mother, you know.
So you would meet with the victims?
Always, mm-hmm. always. But then when I became the DA, I didn't have the time. We had 40,000 cases a year.
And you're managing the lawyers and the process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what I did, you know, it's what I did, because I love the courtroom. I was the first woman to prosecute a homicide in the history of my county. And they were like, oh, my boss said to me, Janine, women can't go for the jugular. You can't get into the courtroom. And, you know, I used to try cases on the down low, where I would take the cases of the men assistant DAs because I was the first woman in the office. And so the men would complain at night that they wanted to go out drinking. It was Thursday night and they had to do a case in, say, 20 miles away in North Salem or something. And they would all sit there in the library for lunch. And I would say, well, I'll handle your calendar, because they had me in the appeals bureau. I was law review, and they figured, oh, she'll write great appeals. Let her sit there for the rest of her life. So I remember saying, I'll do your court. I'll do your court cases. And this was in the early 80s, and we were not computerized yet. So I would put Bob DeLascio or Bruce Trent, those are real names, on the files and go to court and do their case. And nobody knew the better for it. So then I came back and I said to them, when the guys would come together in the library where I worked all the time, I said, you've got a trial next week. And I remember Bob saying, ugh. I said, I'll handle it. He said, how can you handle it? You don't know anything. So I said, well, maybe it won't go to trial. I lied. It was a little lie. And I tried the case. And it was a drunk driving case. We picked the jury, did the whole thing, and convicted the driver. And for 1 year, I tried cases on the down low. Nobody knew.
Under his name?
Under Bob's name, under Bruce Trent's name, under who is the other one? I forget all their names, because, hey, they got to go out. They got to take their girlfriends out. They got to go out drinking, whatever they wanted to do. And, you know, Janine, who didn't have kids but was married at the time, I was like, this is the only way I'm going to get into a courtroom. They're not going to let me in. So one day I got a call from the chief assistant. His name was Tom Fussell. And this will show you how old I am. He's a cross between Peter Laurie and Edward G. Robinson, if anybody watches old movies. And I walked in, and he's kind of sitting there with that slick back hair. He had a cigarette in his hand. He didn't look up, and he said, sit down. And he said to me, the chief assistant, remember, we're almost like the military chain of command there. And he said, who the hell gives you the right to try a case? And I went, oh, you know, got out. And I said, well, Mr. Fussell, I just wanted to, you know, his name was Tom Fussell. I said, Mr. Fussell, I just wanted to help. I just wanted help. He says, you don't know how to try a case. You're in the appeals bureau. And I said, Mr. Fussell, I am in the appeals bureau and I have read your trial transcripts for years. And everything I learned from you. And Mr. Fussell, I never lost a case. And I remember him turning around and picking his head up and saying, you're one sly fox, aren't you? And then they gave me the right to try murder cases and all that.
But wait, I had to jump ahead then. Because there was something I was going to ask you about that you didn't ever tell me. But not that you have to tell me your whole life. I should have maybe known this. You wrote a book called Sly Fox.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know you wrote novels.
Those are about my alter egos.
I got to read these.
Yeah, they're about me.
So Sly Fox.
Sly Fox, Clever Fox.
And the name is Danny Fox.
Danny Fox was a character. And we were in talks to do a series, and it didn't go through, which was fine with me. But I wrote novels. And that first one was all about me. The first homicide I went to, I was an assistant DA, and they said to me, you're a girl. You don't have to go on homicide calls. And whenever in the county there's a homicide, they would call the guys, and they would go out to the scene. So I get the call, and I won't bore you with the dispatch saying they want to talk to a man. I go out to the scene, and they wouldn't let me in because the cop said, what are you talking about? Whose badge is that? And it was crazy in the beginning.
So you had a trailblaze.
Oh, yes. I had a trailblaze.
And you became a judge?
Yeah, I became a judge. I was the first woman.
Appointed or elected?
Elected. I had to run for office.
Why did you decide to run?
Because I wanted to be DA. And I knew that unless I had some other, you know, real experience, that women weren't looked at as people who could make it in the criminal justice system. And so what I ended up doing was I ran for judge. I was the first woman elected in the history of the county. And, you know, I did a lot of good things as judge. I spent a lot of time with victims. Because of my DA background, I knew that it was important to hear from the victims. So periodically, I would call the victims in and see whether it was a mother and a child or whether it was, you know, a guy who had been seriously hurt. How does this sentence strike you? Does this sound like justice to you? And it was very unusual at the time. And then I ended up running for DA, and there was a whole hullabaloo. Like, oh my gosh, you know, she's got two little kids. How's she going to be the DA? And I said, wait a minute, the guy I'm running against has three kids, and his wife is pregnant right now. But that didn't fit.
I know.
So we had to have a press conference, and my then husband had to get up and say, I'll be home too. We will take care of the kids. It is just stunning what
it
I had to
amazing.
Do.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the things I say in the book is that today we have so much to be grateful for people who came before us.
Yeah.
And for the men who gave us the opportunity too along the way. But
no question.
And for me, that's in particular true.
Me too.
And I tell them, like, if you are born in America and educated as a woman today, then all you have to decide is what do you want to do and how hard do you want to work? And you get to make all the choices. And I said, you know, there's freedom in making choices. Don't be upset or mad or frustrated that you have to make choices. You get to make choices.
What an opportunity.
Yes.
To say, I want to be this or I want to be that. We are so fortunate because, you know, when I was growing up, it was like, no, you can't be a lawyer. Girls aren't lawyers. You're going to carry your baby in the courtroom. You're kidding. You're taking a guy spot in law school. I mean, that's what I heard.
What do you think
years.
Now that the majority of students at law schools are women?
They are. They are. And I talked to my daughter, who's an attorney, and, you know, I say, what's it like? And she said, well, you know, it's still kind of tough becoming partners and all that. I said, Kiki, it's so, you know, you've come a long way.
Yeah. You also threw your hat in the ring to run for U.S. Senate.
Yes, I did that. I threw my hat in the ring for about 6 weeks against Hillary. And I never knew what fake news was until I started reading about myself. Mm. And I was reading about something that I had not yet done, a press conference. It was at a dairy in upstate New York somewhere. And they said I said this or that, and I didn't. And I got out of the race, and it was the primary race at that point. And Casey McFarland was vying for it, as well as John Spencer. John Spencer won the primary, and John Spencer ended up running. I ended up running for attorney general that year against Andrew Cuomo. And he beat me. And my signature issue at that point was that pedophiles, we had a law which allowed us to keep them incarcerated after they served their time if we could prove that they were a danger to themselves or others, a continuing danger. And there were many of them, you know, who are just addicted to having sex with children. Mm-hmm. And you can't say if you take your medicine, you'll be fine, because I did sting operations, the first in the country, internet pedophile stings. And they would just meet my guys online in a minute, and they would be waiting sentencing on a case that I was handling, and they'd go out to meet another child. Mm-hmm. And the irony here is that Andrew Cuomo ends up, you know, getting out of office because of his sexual misbehaviors.
What did you learn about that? What did you learn about yourself when you threw your hat in the ring to run?
Well, I had already run four times. I had to run for judge. I had to run three times for district attorney. And
do you get more used to the slings and arrows?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't bother
me. I wanted to ask you about that, because one time I asked our CEO, it was after her first year of being CEO, I said, you know, what did you learn about yourself in this year? And she said, something that surprised me, but I loved hearing it. She said, I didn't realize I had such a thick skin.
Ooh.
And for a lot of people are sensitive to criticism.
Yeah.
You can now get it online as well as through the mail. You get it all sorts of places, right? But what is it that, do you have any advice for people who are trying to maybe reset their minds so that they won't be so wounded by criticism?
Well, I think what people need to do is, you know, sit down with yourself and define who you are to yourself. And once you define who you are, you start to build up a wall, because when they say things about you that aren't true, it can't get through the wall. You know, for me, you know, they would say things like, you know, maybe in a case, maybe I wasn't tough enough. I mean, I was really tough. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just like brushing off, you know, dust on a collar. You just brush it off. You cannot focus on it. You cannot let other people define who you are. If you do, you'll be wounded constantly. You can't do that. You know, you have to say, to hell with them. They're irrelevant. They're not in my life. They don't know me. They don't know what I'm talking about and why I made the decision I did.
We'll be right back with more of this interview after this.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Your mom also helped you deal with things. Like, for example, I love the story about what she told you when Saturday Night Live decided you were going to be one of their feature people.
Yeah. Well, Mom, you know, she thought it was hilarious. You know, they made me into this person who is they couldn't explain why I had such an abrupt kind of in your face, over the top personality. So they had to say I was a drunk. Mm-hmm. And my mom and I would end up laughing about that stuff. But obviously I'm not. In fact, I'll go out to dinner. We'll go out to dinner tonight. I won't have a drink. Mm-hmm. You know, occasionally I will. But my mother just said to me, yeah, if you weren't important, obviously they wouldn't care. But we thought it was really funny.
I remember you said that your mom said, Janine, it's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, she did.
And that is a good way to have a sense of humor about things.
I thought it was hysterical.
Can help a lot, right? And to laugh back.
Yeah. Laugh back, laugh with them, mm-hmm. because they're making fun of something that isn't the real you.
Right.
So my wall is up, and it's very interesting the way they decide how they want to portray you when there are so many people that they could portray that way.
So I'm just going to use your words. You said you're not a spring chicken.
I'm not
a spring chicken. But you just took on a big new opportunity role, transitioned here at Fox into being the co-host of The Five, which is in February, we were the number one show in all of television, believe it or not.
Yeah.
That's what happens when football goes away.
Yes.
But, you know, tell me about that. And
okay.
Amigo, because some people will say, like, why don't you retire? You've had so much success. You've written books. You've been on television. You've been in movies. You've tried the cases. You've accomplished everything that you wanted. You were a grandmother of a beautiful young boy. Like, why not take it easy?
I don't know how to take it easy. If I had to get up every day and take it easy, I don't know what I would do. Look, I am blessed to have this opportunity and to work 5 days a week. I couldn't be happier. I mean, you have to readjust some things in your life. But, you know, I see myself working, you know, longer. Yeah. I mean, you know, I have friends who've retired. I mean, I don't want to play whatever, mahjong, cards, golf, go to lunch. You know, that's not me. And you know what? I mean, I've written 7 books and, you know, I could write another book. I probably will. But to me, that's not life. I want to be in the fight. And that's one of the reasons I left the bench. You know, as a judge, I'm an activist. I'm a fighter. I want to settle scores. And as a judge, I was basically just someone who was, you know, saying, no, sustained, you know, denied, objection. But and I couldn't wait to get back as DA, you know, because the DA was about taking care of victims. It was about settling scores. It was about making things as right as you could. And that's who I am.
It's interesting because any prosecutor or former prosecutor that I talk to, I'll put Trey Gowdy as an example.
Yeah.
It's the job they miss the most.
Oh, without a doubt. Being DA was the best job in the world. Mm-hmm. And I ran for office 3 times. I would have been elected for the 4th term, but I just term limited myself. I said, Janine, you've done it all.
Do something else.
Yeah, it's time to do something else.
I have 2 other questions. One of the things I write about in the book is that every person, and it's geared to women, but this goes to all people, but let's just talk about women for a second, that you have to be responsible of taking care of your health.
Yeah.
Like that's a job. That is a job that you have. And I know that you are a survivor, a cancer survivor, mm-hmm. and you think about your well-being and your health, nutrition, exercise, and sleep. We were talking about sleep on our way here. I might get more than you. But maybe a little bit about that in terms of all the things that you're doing, how busy you are climbing the ladder out there, young ladies. But you have to remember to take care of your health.
Yeah. You know, and one of the problems when you're talking to young ladies is they think because they're young that they are immune to any kind of health problem. And, you know, my best friend's niece is like, you know, 29, 30, and she's got breast cancer. I mean, I am a survivor. And we all hate to go to the doctors, probably because we fear that they might tell us something that's not good. But when my doctor told me something that wasn't good, you know, it was a years long effort. And I was on television doing my show, Justice with Judge Janine, with wearing a wig. I had no eyebrows. I had no eyelashes. It was a very tough time, but, you know, I'm back and I'm fine. And I make sure that I, you know, get all the appointments in that I need to. And if you deny yourself the health, but at the same time try to make sure you look pretty, like with the hair color and the nails and this and that, it's so superficial. You've got to mm-hmm. take care of your take inner health.
The last thing I want to ask is, I think it's amazing how you're a great cook. I see you out with your friends. You went to that beautiful party the other day down in Florida.
Yeah.
But what do you like to do for fun?
For fun, I like to cook. I like my kids to come home. My son's birthday was this weekend and all his friends came by and I cooked for like, I don't know, it was 22, 24 kids. And they were having a great time at my house and my daughter came with the baby and it was just, I guess that's the fun for me now. Yeah. But I like to work out. I go to SoulCycle and I like working. My life is good. This is my best life right now. And I love working with you. How's that?
Let's leave it there. All right. Thanks, Judge.
Thanks.
I have really loved getting to know Judge Jeanine. She is a joy. She is funny. And she is so smart. And I've never seen anybody prepare so much for the five. She puts me to shame. Make sure you subscribe to this series wherever you download podcasts and leave a rating and review. I'm Dana Perino. Everything will be okay.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day. Featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to Fox News Podcast shows ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or follow wherever you get your podcasts.